Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and hopefully it's Dr. Jackson. After long, we're over to board. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. Dow Futures out down 240. We got the NASDAQ Futures down 69. S&P Futures down 22. So not so good. Chinese growth and trade numbers yesterday were not so hot. And we're rising fears over global growth, or make that lack of global growth. And stuff has been coming for a while. You know, I don't know what everybody is all that surprised about. I mean, we've seen this global growth thing slowing. We've seen the growth here, I believe, slowing. Anyway, Kevin, how are you before I give a crummy view of the world here?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. You don't have to give a crummy view of the world. It's Bears-Packers coming up.
That's true. We're marching down that road, and the Bears might actually beat them for, what, like this second or third time in the last 100?
Well, yeah, I look at the this year's Bears are... You know, maybe this is a best case scenario, but they're sort of like the 2015 Cubs. They're good. They're a little ahead of schedule, and there's still nothing until they prove that they can beat the team that's been historically in front of them. In the Cubs' case, it was the Cardinals, and they did, and they got them in the playoffs and won that series. And the Bears aren't going to get the Packers in the playoffs, but they're, you know, this is their chance to say, hey, it's our division now.
Well, that's true. You know, it reminds me of it. And I feel good for Nagy. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Nagy.
Neither one of those.
Some people say Nagy, but the people I have ever known that spelled it that way say Nagy. It's almost like it's N-E-G-Y.
Well, he actually landed, and I've done, I won't say a lot of research on this, because I haven't, Kevin, you've done more than me, but it's interesting about when you talk about coaches, the good ones versus the bad ones, and I've read a lot of situations, or I've read articles, opinions from guys like you, that basically say, a lot of times, it's not the best coach, but if you have the best reputation, you can find the best situation. And, you know, the perfect example of that was years ago.
That's too many big words for me.
Well, in other words,
you explain.
Say when Lou Holtz comes to Notre Dame, okay, it's not just him showing up, him saying, if I show up, I need the Loftus Center, I need an indoor facility, I need all this stuff. It's part of a huge retooling back into football is important here. It's not just him showing up. And the college level. It's a rededication to a stadium expansion, to this, to that, to us really doing whatever we have to do, legal or illegal, to have a football team. And in the pros, I mean, the reason why the Bears have had, you know, somewhat a string of, shall we say, first year coaches, is that they don't want to pay anybody. And they never really grabbed anybody that was, was a high end dude, but like you look at a Bill Parcells when he left the Giants, he was I'm going to say 2-3 years out of football. My memory's getting a little fuzzy. You know, who's he going to go coach? Well, all of a sudden the New York Jets had a year where they were absolutely horse bleep. They must have lost. They had two or three draft picks from people they had let go. They had a bunch of draft picks coming, and they also had, I'm going to say, 10, 12 people on injured reserve. Some massive number. And they were, I'm going to say, 1-15, 2-14, something like that. So the chances are, Kevin, the three of us could have dropped on that team, and I won't say reversed that record, but we could have over 500 was absolutely in the wind for anybody who could talk. Because you essentially were going to get 13 ball players. If you drafted anybody decent, you were going to get like the 10 people you had who were pretty good and two or three new people from the top of the list. And you had an amazing thing to start up with. And this guy, sort of the same thing. They had cap money, so they signed some receivers. They had no receivers last year. At the end of the year, how many of the guys on defense ran IR? Maybe with Danny Trevathan?
They had a lot, yet they still had a top five defense last year.
Yeah, what I'm saying, but they had, wasn't the guy in the middle, or not in the middle. The guy was a really good interior lineman. They got two
Hicks.
Hicks, he was on IR.
Hicks had injuries. Leonard Floyd went on IR.
Yeah.
Trevathan, as you mentioned. They had all kinds of issues last
Wasn't
year.
One of the safeties or something, too? But, I mean, he essentially got six or seven starting, and even got, what's his name, the guard back for a while.
But they were still a top five defense last year, because Vic Fangio's that good.
Well, what I'm saying is he not only got a couple of really good draft picks, just Rokan Smith, but he's seven, eight players up on last year's team. So the turnaround was sort of there. And they also have a team that appears to like each other. They don't have a bunch of idiots, which is kind of rare in some of these teams. They're a very likable group, I think. I mean, and all of a sudden, you know, I don't mind watching them again. I think they're pretty cool. So,
well, the other part of it, the other part of the mix, though, Tom, is that there's a leadership aspect that is especially important in the professional ranks. When you look at some of these college coaches, they can get away with being tyrants.
Yeah.
You know, not so in the NFL. You have to balance having authority and being the so-called player's coach. And, you know, the best example I can think is if you take Phil Jackson at the Lakers. What happened? How did he do with the Lakers when the first stint that he had there?
I don't know.
Won championships.
Yeah.
Then what happened? He left for a few years. What happened to the Lakers? All of a sudden, they, you know, there was no continuity. They weren't that good. They hired Phil Jackson again, and all of a sudden they were champions again, because Phil Jackson's strength was never that he was such a brilliant tactician. Phil Jackson's strength was that he managed the egos so well. And I think that's the part that gets overlooked. And if you look back at some of the Bears coaches, and we may be seeing this with the Bulls right now too, that they have not managed the egos very well. That's the big challenge. That's the part that so few people do well. And if you can keep everybody on the same page, then you know that's huge, because there is hardly anybody in the NFL not named Cleveland that doesn't completely lack talent.
Well, there's a there's somewhat of a, and this is the mystery mix. If you come in and people buy into your spiel, whatever your spiel happens to be, and all of a sudden it shows some progress and you win a few games in a row, people pile on. They don't like the after game reporters sticking a microphone in their face. How come you guys suck again? I mean, you'd rather be winners. And I think they kind of go hand in glove. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of good guys that, but I mean, the Bulls situation is somewhat different in the sense that the guy basically said, I want you guys to play defense. And they said, we don't want to. I mean, you probably could have said it better, but we're talking about a team that had no interest. They were just, they were out there playing total playground ball. In my mind, they were uncoachable. Now he wants to coach them, and they don't want to be coached. Now they don't have a Jimmy Butler on the team who didn't mind playing as bad as he was in other ways, personality wise. He at least would be happy to play defense. They don't have a Michael Jordan. So yeah, we're buying into this guy. And Bobby Cox wasn't the world's, his thing as a manager was, he had, what was the pitcher's name? It was the captain. Somebody came up, he took him out to dinner last night. That night he'd say, this is the way we behave on this team, if you want to be here. I mean, he did 90% of the work for Bobby Cox, I think.
Well, yeah, except that, you know, when the head coach in this case, or it could be a CEO, a CFO, it could be, you know, anybody at the C-level in business, when they have that leader on the team, the wisdom is to work through that leader. Is you take someone like a Greg Maddux and you sell your agenda to Greg Maddux. knowing full well that if Greg Maddux is bought in, everybody's going to be bought in.
Well, allegedly in the Bears, that guy is Hicks.
Yeah.
You heard that, man?
Yeah, and I think that's a big deal. When you come into an organization, you want to change the culture. How do you recognize culture? Well, you know, you just sort of look around. What are the stories people tell? Who are the heroes? Who are, you know, kind of the leaders and all of that? Well, you know what? If you want to change the culture, then you got to make sure different stories get told. And whoever the leaders, or even if they're the ringleaders, which is a little bit different concept, they're the ones you have to recruit. And so you need to size that up. You need to get all of those people on your side, basically, and get them to buy into what you're trying to do. And then the action, you know, then you can convert your agenda into action. But you're not going to do it, you know, you go back to the Bulls. I don't know who the leaders are versus the ringleaders, but I do know that they don't, you know, Boylan didn't get, you know, he didn't enlist anybody. He just did, and that's not going to work.
No, but it does come a point where you tell somebody you got to play some defense. It's like in the NFL. Then you have to do it by the stick philosophy. The guys don't pay attention to you. All of a sudden, they're gone instantly. You know, and that's,
yeah, and you may have to cut people loose in the process. And you know, I suspect, you know, as soon as Jabari Parker can be traded, which I think is coming up in the next week, then you know he would be a guy that is not bought into the vision, and I wouldn't be surprised if they sell him for, you know, a little rack of basketballs or something like that. But there really is a conscious process that, you know, I mean, let me back up the train, because what I would say is leadership is something you have to do very, very intentionally. It isn't, there is no such thing as the natural born leader or the guy in charge. You don't just come in and start dishing out the orders. What you do is you come in and you start dishing out the vision. Here's what kind of, in the Bulls case, here's what kind of a team I want us to be by the end of the season. Here's the kind of team I want us to be at the end, you know, at this time next year. And you know, can you get people to buy into it? Can you get the guys on the team who are the leaders to buy into that? Because if you can, then you're going to be very, very successful. If you don't take the time to do that, it's not going to happen.
Especially
when, you know, it's a bunch of highly paid athletes who consider themselves professionals and don't really want to be told.
Well, that's right. They got it all figured out. But hey, speaking of segues, speaking of leadership, we have the China reported this ugly industrial output number according to one headline here. Chinese markets are I'll tell you exactly how far they're down. You got the Nikkei down 441, you got the Shanghai down 40, that's 1.5%. Hang Seng down more than 0.75%. So they're getting whacked a little bit, and yet their leadership is telling their people it has nothing to do with the tariff wars. We have our leadership telling our people that actually our one leader is telling people how great we're doing because we're reeling in all this money from the Chinese, which is total BS. How is it that we have worldwide leaders that, where do they all decide that they're not going to, that the truth is this elusive, Kevin? And is that a long-term, if you're going to be in politics your whole lifetime, is that what you want to build your whole career in, just lying to people? It appears some do.
Yeah, well, when is the last time that you felt we had an administration that was truthful with us?
Possibly Bush 1.
Yeah.
Jerry Ford, yes. I'm going to say Jerry Ford, yes.
So. So I think that answers your question.
But it's reaching endemic proportions to where.
No, it isn't. It's just being exposed better.
I don't know. I won't use the last name. My buddy Todd. he liked to spin a story a little bit, shall we say. Is that a fair assessment, Manny? It's been a story.
I'd say that's fair.
I'd say, Todd, there's like three levels of bull bleep. He goes, what do you mean, Chief? And I go, well, if your mother's on her deathbed and you walk in and she says, how was your day trading? You might say it was okay, even though it probably wasn't, because the subject isn't you, it's her. You know, I might go along with that one. Then there's the next level where once in a great while your kid wants to go skiing and you say, well, now we'll go next year, and you're not exactly sure, you know, next year you're going to try the best you can, but it's not really a promise. Then there is a level where you just say whatever is the most convenient, whatever you think people want to hear, to the point where it becomes such a habit, you don't even know you're doing it yourself. And I think we've sort of reached that stage. And I wonder why we put up with it. Maybe it's just because I read the numbers more than most, and maybe that makes me unhappy for doing that, but at some point, you can't have people that you're paying massive salaries to tell you that there's absolutely the cost of living has not gone up when everybody you talk to says everything I have, tax, every fee, every this, every association dues, every you name it, is gone up 30% in the last 2 years. I mean, I don't know why it's their job to keep telling me the opposite, Kevin. I don't know. But it seems to be. The president, the same way. The tariffs are not affecting our economy. Yes, they are. For God's sake, yes, they are. And how much is up to debate. But to say zero is insane. And yet, nobody seems to care. Whatever lands, it lands. And I don't know how you come back from that. You're right. It's been several presidents in a row. And well, not to mention a congressman.
Honestly, I almost appreciate the ones where they're just not very good at lying, and therefore, you know, you look and you say, I know that's a load, as opposed to, and I'll single him out just because he was just so good at this. He was awesome at it. But that was President Obama, who, you know, he could just smile and lie so casually, and so could his spokespeople. If you put, you know, a Josh Earnest out there, or what was the guy's name before him? I can't remember his name. You know, those guys, they just go out there and you know, it was. I don't know if you know who Erwin Mainway is, but
I heard the name
Mainway, yeah. with Charm. He was Dan Aykroyd's character on Saturday Night Live, who sold the dangerous toys.
I actually think a lot of it started with Clinton. People were astounded at what he got away with, and just kept going further.
Yeah, you know, I actually just heard the clip yesterday of him saying, "I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky."
Yeah,
and he was emphatic. Yeah, you know, and I got to get back to the doing the business of the American people. Man,
I will say this, and. In some sort of, let's put it this way, in some sort of sophomoric world, like when we were, you know, 17 or something, let's just say oral sex was not considered real sex. So, I mean, in today's world, it's pretty darn close.
Tom, if you want to start down that road, we may have to do a little editing out of today's show.
I'm just saying, but that was back when people were 16 and 17 and they were teenagers, felt that way. You know, I'm saying it was a different world and a different
right. But
definition.
If that's the outlook, that's strictly splitting hairs. And
oh, God,
that
yeah.
is. You know, that is exactly the, you know, that's almost the worst kind of lie, because it's, you know, technically true, but it's not true.
I will, Matty might have dumped this, but I'm saying a lot of young ladies that were 17 and 18 that would perform oral sex still felt they were virgins.
Sure.
I think that's a fair
like
statement.
Like I said, this is probably not a conversation we should continue.
Well,
let unfold.
It's not my, especially if you're married. It's obviously a whole different game. I mean, which he was, but or is. That's got to be the world's worst. I mean, world's most convenient marriage, shall we say?
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
But you know, again, it's none of our business. We must work on some level for them. But I'm saying is, I think
you know, they're on a speaking tour now.
Oh God,
they've been going around the country, and they can't sell tickets. Nobody wants to hear them.
Oh God. It doesn't. Well, nobody wants to hear her. I think people still like to hear him for some reason.
I think he's lost his fastball.
I think he might have to. May have to. But let's hope so. For God's sake. I mean, I haven't liked the guy since. But I mean, one group gets more and more whopper than the other. And I think when one group decided not to go to Congress to declare war, like for Vietnam, everybody's taking that ball and run with it too. You know, I mean, we can be shooting people and sending troops all over the world. We never talk to Congress at all. I mean, I don't know if that's the way it ought to be. I think it probably shouldn't be that way. But I mean, in terms of the economy, you you can and there's always a way to trade this, and Fari's been talking about it, but if you have a position right now, there's times for 7 or 8 years, all you want to do is be, I'll use the term short premium. You want to be short calls, you want to be short puts. We never went anywhere. We didn't have a 1% move in, what, a year and a half or two. Now we have markets that are priced at a 1% move for the next day. So if there are times, Kevin, when you can be, I'll say, a long premium trader and get away with it. And now is one of those times. Now that could stop today. It could stop Monday. It could stop whenever. I mean, it's not a prediction. It's not me telling you how to trade. I'm just saying the last 4 to 5 months, if you're a long gamma trader, is what they'll call that, your long volatility, you have done very exceptionally well. Because you're the person who can go to sleep happily and say, S&P futures are at 2,700, I'm at 2,710 and I'm 2,690 bid. Have at it, boys. And maybe you'll wake up and you bought them at 90 and you sold them at 10 and you bought them at 90 again. You don't have to worry about it because you're covered, because you've got your options. You bought to protect yourself. You bought a straddle or a strangle or something. For a long period of time, all you did was wake up and your straddle was $8 yesterday, is $7 today. You sit there and go, this is just swell. And nothing ever moved. Well, now we're in a moving stage. So there's ways to trade this. It's very difficult for a retail person to trade this way. My guys are doing better than most in this
sounds
last
like
few
a months. Job for Pro Direct to me, but
well, yeah,
that's just me.
Well, I mean, but you have to know. But now it's the buy and hold theory. People are going to buy and hold to zero. If we go there, which we probably won't. But everybody, it's like every war, the generals refight the last war, even though the equipment has gotten better, right? And people are still running charges at people in the Civil War. When people had rifles, which was pretty stupid, and they ran charges at people in World War One, they had machine guns, which was even more stupid. But that's what the generals did. They threw people at guns. World War Two, no, you tried to have a tank with you if you're going to do that. At least you learned a little bit. But I mean, same thing with the trading. I mean, I've seen in my lifetime, my trading lifetime, virtually every type of experience. There's short period time, short premium time, there's long premium time, and if you hang in there and wait, your style comes back again. But you also have to be willing to change styles. For 7 or 8 years, maybe you want to just be in the market with a money manager that didn't do anything except play golf. Now that's not where you want to be. Now 6 months from now, maybe that's what you want to be again. But it's all changes, Kevin. It's like a football game. It's raining today. It's snowing today. It's sunny today. It's artificial turf. It's grass. It's muddy. It's not. Everything changes, right? I mean, that's just the way the world is. And those that can change with it a little bit do better than people that don't, I think. I don't know if that's the way you teach your people, but...
Well, everything's situational. That is actually the way I teach it. But there is going back on the leadership part of it, though, there is also a consistency that you have or predictability. You shouldn't... leaders should not be surprising their people. So, and I'll give you an example of that. When, in my IT days, when I usually gave, because they were professional people, and I usually gave them a lot of room, they didn't need to be micromanaged. They were professional people with certifications and, some industry recognition and all that. That's not what they needed. However, when the poop hit the fan, something was really wrong, then you could count on me to all of a sudden turn into the biggest control freak you ever saw, because I had to direct it, because it was my systems that were in my butt on the line. So I'd just tell my guys, here's what to expect when it's gonna when things get difficult, and then I'll go back to being what you have. You don't surprise people. And I would think, as a trader, you have to have a core philosophy too. I would guess. You can tell me. But
well, right now,
got to be.
Let's talk about it after break.
Some
Kevin.
Core philosophy, and then you go from there. Go to break.
SP futures down 23. We'll talk about that after the break.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and one base, stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Holland, Mr. Weber on the board, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Backdrop of news this morning. China is getting rid of the entire tariff on U.S. cars, at least for a while. I don't know how many cars go there. We build a lot there, so I don't know how big of a number that is, but they're going to drop the 25% tariff
Totally. We've got the Chinese manufacturing numbers were terrible. And we've got, you know, issues in Washington as usual. Behind that background, we've got S&P futures down 22, Dow futures down 203, NASDAQ futures down 61, except for a mixed and very, very choppy day yesterday. Oil down 35 cents, 52.23, 10-year yield 2.88. Over in Asia, whack, whack, whack. Nikkei down 441, that's 2%. Shanghai down 41.5%, under 2,600, 2,593. Hang Seng major close above 26,000, 26,094, but still down 429, 1.6%. Like I said, we have West Texas, down 35 cents, Brent down 56. Natural gas under $4 down, 17 cent move, that's a big move. It must be warming up a little bit countrywide, Matty, we're 40 instead of 25, so I guess that's good for gas. We got gold down, $5, big drop in gold. Silver down 18 cents, that's not good for the good guys. We have Forest Traffic Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. All kinds of issues already, Chief. Even on a Friday morning, it's usually our quietest morning of the week. We have an accident on the outbound Kennedy just before Kimball, blocking the two left lanes. This has traffic backed up. Downtown to Montrose, 35 minutes now. Out to O'Hare is 47 minutes and building at this hour. Those are pretty long travel times. Further west, it looks like we have an issue on the I-90 Jane Addams. On the inbound side, the Oasis is closed at the old Des Plaines Oasis. Effective today, the gas stations and convenience stores of the Des Plaines Oasis on the Jane Addams are closed permanently. The structures will be demolished, and so there's crews on the scene that's causing a bit of a slowdown there, so keep that in mind. Lakeshore Drive, we have a crash blocking the two left lanes southbound just before Chicago Avenue before you're heading into downtown. So Hollywood to Monroe is 20 minutes now on the Lakeshore Drive. And then on the south side, on the Skyway, I-90, on the inbound side, just before the Dan Ryan Expressway, there is a crash that's causing stop-and-go traffic. So keep that in mind. All kinds of issues out there. Stevenson itself looks okay, as does the Bishop Ford and I-57. Eisenhower traffic building, no accidents to report. Same for the Edens, but issues on the Kennedy, the Skyway. It's affecting the Dan Ryan and the Jamie Adams as well. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Weather today, partly cloudy skies. We should stay relatively dry after some drizzle this morning. We'll reach a high of 43. Right now it's overcast and 40 degrees downtown. And get this, Chief, it's actually warmer right now in Chicago than it is in Phoenix. It's clear and 39 in Phoenix. Of course, they're going up to a high of 70. In sports, Bulls were in Mexico City last night. They lost to the Magic 97-91. Suns beat the Mavericks 99-89. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. Coyotes lost to the Sabres 3-1. And it was a great Thursday night football game for those of you that took the time to watch it. Chiefs were up 28-14, and the Chargers rallied back and behind a two-point conversion beat the Chiefs in Kansas City 29-28. Now both teams are 11-3. Chief.
All right, Kevin, explain to us the genius of the Chargers moving to L.A.
There is no genius to it. I will say this, though. The Chiefs own the tiebreakers, but it wouldn't take much for the road to the Super Bowl to go through the 27,000-seat stadium where the Chargers play.
That would be unbelievable, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That could be a tough ticket to get.
You don't think that they'd somehow move those to the Coliseum?
Oh, they're not going to make them. They're not going to give up their home field advantage.
Why is that an advantage?
Being on your home field and your own locker rooms and all that kind of stuff.
What kind of locker rooms do they have at that place?
Well, besides, it's going to be 27,000 seats and still going to be 20,000 of the visiting team's fans.
That's true.
No skyboxes.
It's bizarre. Yeah, it's. But, you know, they had to, if they were going to leave, they had to get out of that other stadium quickly. So, I haven't really paid close attention to what the long-term plans are for the for a stadium for them and how that's going to unfold. But, the old place was a dump, and, you know, so I understand that they didn't want to play there anymore. But,
well, David Rivers,
as usual with a sports team, they want the city to build it for them.
Wait, what's his name?
Philip Rivers?
Philip Rivers. David Rivers was a guy in Notre Dame. He
was good too.
He refuses to move. He's got 8 kids. They're in school and he's commuting every day. I guess 70 minutes. Yeah.
That happens. You know, That happens in the real world too, where you know someone's got to take a job or take a transfer or something like that, and it's inconvenience. I don't know how old Rivers' kids are, but you know there may be a point where he's ready to move, but this isn't it.
Well, he's got one and a half, and he's got eight already here, so they're all like every other year, every year, I think. And then the wife looks like a model. It's interesting, but anyway, it was a nice looking family for God's sake, but. He seems like a decent enough sort. I mean, just they can't sell their seat licenses. And anyway, Kevin, we were talking before the break regarding trading this kind of a market. You're talking about trading really from the long side here. When I say long, I mean premium. A trader, when he says long or short, he's talking about premium usually, not necessarily the market. As a trader doesn't care if it goes up or down. If it's not going down, you want to be short. If it goes up, you want to be down. If you want to be long. Retail public thinks you're always supposed to be long, and if you make money going down, you're somehow a communist or something, but that isn't really true. Sometimes the markets go up, sometimes they go down, and you want to be on the right side either way. I know I'm speaking treason to the retail community, but it isn't treason. Right now, you're not going to get the president tweet before he gets it. Okay, so you can't trade the front end of these moves, but you can fade them. I know I'm using professional terms here, but that means you can sell into rallies and buy into dips. So this morning, I mean, we're basically getting our ass kicked in the market. I'm going to say if I was long a straddle last night in the Spider and the S&P, I'm a buyer of E-minis or S&Ps right here. Why wouldn't you be? You got a 22-point move in your favor. Maybe you buy half of them, hope it goes down lower. Maybe you buy them all. And when they go back up again, you sell out your E-minis and you hope it happens again tomorrow or Monday, because it very well might. It might happen this afternoon. So it sets you up to be on the rebound, Kevin, and that's how you have to trade this. But it's a very professional way to trade. So it's very difficult for retail people right now to trade this market.
Yeah, I understand. But I guess where I was going with it, too, with the thought I was expressing before we had to cut away, is that if you come to you and to PTI, you have an expectation of how business is going to be done.
Correct.
And that's, you know, that's part of being a good business and the same concepts that's behind being a good leader. You know how business is going to be done. You know what the philosophy is. You know, you may have people who say, I don't want to be protected in the market or something like that, and you might say, okay, I'll do your trade. But for the most part, you know what's going to be recommended. You know what's and you know what level of integrity there's going to be. I think that's the important part, and that's the part that, you know, we're chipping away at that as a society, and that's a shame.
Yeah, I think it is. And but it always seems to come from somewhere. I mean, for a while, the Obama administration, all the market-moving news came from the Fed in the middle of the night or someplace, but there still were market-moving events because people were out of the box. They were down to interest rates at zero, which created an asset bubble, and all you did was wait to hear for them turning that bus around because you knew you were going the other way, which we have. Right? They've come back a little bit on the interest rates, and we've dropped virtually 10% in the market, okay, which is probably about as good as I thought we could do. And it isn't bad for them to go from 0.5% interest rate to, what are we, 2.25% now? Or maybe 2. I'm going to say, the market only come down 10%. It's pretty damn good, Kevin. I don't think anybody should be bitching about it. It could have been a lot worse. Or, you know, hopefully it won't get a lot worse, but that's not a bad move. The price should have been up the last 10% anyway. You look at it that way. And you look at this stuff a lot of ways. I mean, the things that really concern me are an administration seems to think that if I use the term they're old. Matter of fact, I was watching. I couldn't sleep the other night with a stupid cough. So I threw on some old Star Treks, and what you think the one that comes up was Khan, where when Spock says he's brilliant, but he's two-dimensional in his thinking. I really do believe, I mean, my criticism, other than the tweets and everything else, the current administration, is they don't seem to understand how connected we all are. And I think it's a serious flaw in their thinking. That you can actually drive China to their knees, not that they don't deserve it for a lot of reasons, You drive China to their knees and it won't affect us. That is just wrong. When they own, what do they do? They own over half of our outside purchases of treasury bills and bonds. For God's sake, Kevin, how could it not affect us?
Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, that's always been Trump's way of conducting business. So why should we shouldn't be surprised to see it in the White House? The question is, I'm not blaming the administration as much as we have voters who really didn't understand, who may not have understood that approach, because his approach absolutely, or others who cheered it on, because his approach absolutely is to say, if I can put a vise around your fruit stand, I'm going to squeeze it as hard as I can.
Well, but
until you give in.
But now you've got the Wilbur Rosses, you've got who's the other guy that's in there? Navarro, you've got even a security guy. They're all of that same age and ilk, that somehow we can do this on our own. We could have, when our people owed 95% of our debt.
I'm not sure Navarro is. He's got a little different slant on that. But the others, okay. Yeah, you know more about them than I do.
Well, I'm just saying that the world, reason why I feel this is because my former teacher, Milton Friedman, one day, somebody asked him. That's why you have to be careful whenever you use teachings from people that are, basically friggin' dead for a while. Somebody said, Milton Friedman, Dr. Friedman, what is the problem with the government having too much debt? He says, it's no problem. It's like, you own your wife. What's the difference? The house is still even. The government owes the citizenship money. They're still citizens. You're all in one place. If you would have said, oh, by the way, fast forward 40 years and half that money is going to be owned by people overseas, I think his answer would have been different. I think, I don't know, we can't bring him back and ask him, but I don't see how it wouldn't have been. Do you? Or at least he would have.
Probably not. And yeah, so I hear what you're saying. You're right. You're right that about the interconnectedness, and again, this is how this administration is going to do business. It is what they do. Now, have other administrations done business in the same way? Sometimes.
Well, you have
maybe not in terms of international economics, but in terms of how they deal with other things. Absolutely, we've seen this.
But how do you, Kevin, when you have people from the administration, and again, I don't dislike these people, they come out and they say, we have intellectual property issues, we've got these people demanding this stuff from our companies, are coughing it up, that they shouldn't be coughing it up, systems here, stuff there, Chinese are cheating, they're stealing it, and this is an outrage, we got to stop all this crap. Then it could have been an hour later, not the chairman of Boeing is a lady, right? So it must have been the second in charge. Some guy goes out there and he goes, the next 20 years, well over half of our business is going to be in Asia. Now, they don't give a rat's behind if the Chinese get a drawing of one of the software systems in there. All they care about is selling planes. Now, those two news conferences or whatever they were, speeches, they should have made both those idiots, I use that term loosely, sit down in the same room and listen to what the other person said. They don't match, Kevin.
Why don't they match?
Well, because one guy, all he cares about is selling 1,000 planes over there and doesn't care what he gives them. The other guy's saying, you can't give them any of this stuff. Well, yeah, well, okay.
But I don't think that's what they're saying. If there's things that we can't give to another country, that's encoded into law. You know, for instance, sanctions. Okay, that's one thing. And the problem isn't what companies do contractually with Chinese, Russian, or any other companies. The problem is what is done that is just pure theft outside the boundaries of the contract. And you have to differentiate between those two, because that's what our issue is. If that's not being articulated well, that's a different problem. But that's really the issue, is that we have people who are just stealing stuff.
No, the stealing part, you and I have always been on the same page. And by the way, you and I in the administration, that's not what they're talking about. It's morphed into this them demanding the full plans for the plane from Boeing because they're building the tail in China. They're pissed about that. They're worried about somebody coming over and buying a company and getting the stuff from the company they just bought. It's more past what you and I are pissed off about.
Yeah, yes and no. If that's because you don't have any other choice, because if you don't sell to them, they're going to steal it anyway, that's a different problem than if you choose to sell to them and they acquire the technology as a result of it.
Okay, what I'm saying is they're pushing a little further right now, is what I'm saying. They want to make it essentially illegal for the Chinese to ask for that. Not for us to get...
That's not my read of the situation.
Well, it's... I think it is. I mean, it's pretty much everybody who's coming on the air lately has been saying that that's where they're going. I hope I'm wrong there, but I don't think I am. I mean, they're saying they don't want Boeing or Caterpillar or anybody to give this stuff up, but they've stopped short of saying, by the way, if you do, you're going to jail. That's been my point for the last week. We all know about the stealing, making the copier and, stealing everything, the bare bones of this and that, and taking Microsoft Office.
Or just coming to the United States, going to work for a company, stealing all the trade secrets and feeding them back, as an undercover, is basically an undercover operation. Those are problems.
They came in there and did that with us. We had some guys in here from the Agriculture Department. I think they stole one of my protected index plan things I hand out at seminars. So there's a bunch of guys in China doing it for us.
That's the biggest issue. If we can clean that up, then who cares if Boeing wants to do something contractually? That's Boeing's choice.
See, that's,
but if Boeing, you may, and I'm not saying this is it, but this would be a logical thought process. You may have companies like Boeing saying, "Well, they're going to steal it anyway. I might as well get paid for it."
Kevin, the mindset is one of the guys who was doing the lectures here for these people. This is agricultural stuff. We had our Agriculture Department at the time. The guy goes to the men's room. He comes back, and one of the Chinese guys had stuck. What do you stick in the back of somebody's computer when you try to steal everything that's on there? The little, what do you call the thingy?
Thumb drive, jump drive, whatever.
Yeah, and he goes, "What are you doing?"
USB drive.
He goes, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm stealing the stuff on your computer." "Really?" "We don't do that here." "Why?" "We do it in China all the time." It is a different mindset, and I don't really appreciate it much. I don't think you do either.
Well, no, because you're supposed to adapt to the place you are.
Yeah. Well, we brought them to a, what do you call it, facility, an ethanol facility. And the first thing the guy said is, "Leave all your cameras in the room." They were not happy. So, yeah.
I believe it.
I mean, I've actually watched it happen, so it's not like I'm pro-stealing people's stuff. I mean, I'm not. I just wonder, we just got to make some rules and enforce them like we don't seem to be able to do ever.
Well, no, we're very good about making rules. We do that well. It's the enforcement that's always the issue. And then we don't enforce rules, and this, I'm now speaking globally, not just in trade. We don't enforce rules, and then when something bad happens, then we say, "Well, let's make more rules."
Well, I was talking to some people last night, and the idea with Cohen and these cab medallions. And how I had, as soon as I knew he had those medallions, I knew they had them. Because there's no way the guy was paying taxes on it, right? But now, Mueller, like him, don't like him, whatever, he shows up here. I'm going to say that if you dug through the entire history of Chicago cab medallions for the last 35 years, you're going to find an awful lot of names in there. Now, what do they do? They go in and they pluck one and the other guys are okay? Because they're not going after him this year or what? This selective...
Yeah, well, I don't... Do they have him on anything related to the cab medallions, or are you just saying that tells you he's a shady guy?
No, I suspect that he was... I think that's where the tax evasion started.
Okay, could be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% positive.
I haven't heard the details of it. It's interesting, the campaign contribution thing that he did a plea on as well, because it's essentially the same thing. They tried to prosecuting John Edwards for the same thing. And the jury came back. They had like five or six counts, and the jury came back and acquitted him on one and hung on the others, and the feds chose not to retry him.
Well, my read of it is that when because he's not from Chicago. The Russians bought up all these medallions. For whatever reason, they got some at good prices, some not so good prices before Uber. And so I heard he was involved in that. I'm thinking, okay, he did some work for the Russians. They paid him in cab medallions. And they said, look, these are the best things in the world. You paid $100 a day from a guy. You don't have to do anything. If you want cash, we'll give you cash. Otherwise, you know, if you want to do it legit, you can do it legit. And I'll bet he said, give me some cash and some legit or something along those lines. And as soon as they went there, it was like a beacon. I mean, that's my reading.
Give me enough legit to make it look legit.
Well, or even maybe he took it all cash. I mean, you and I could have bought one of these things, I'm going to say, in 1988 for 20 grand with 2 years left on a car. Had gotten $75 a day for however long that would have been. And, you know, we could have got cash. The guy driving
and you
it.
And you did not call me up to get in on that deal.
My goofy brother
kind
and Dr.
Of,
J.
What kind of a friend are you?
My goofy brother and Dr. J. talked me out of it. You don't want to do that. Those two guys.
Right.
No, but they actually, I mean, at the time it wasn't a spectacular deal. That's what they traded for. It wasn't, I mean, nobody knew they were going to run up to, you know, half a mil or quarter mil before the Olympics allegedly went. You know, this is long before Uber. But it was, but you also could have, you know, if you had a guy that drove it one, you know, just half a day, if you wanted to, in a Saturday with nothing to do, you could have hopped in and drove a cab for a while. Which, you know, I don't want to do, but I did in college.
It might be fun. It might be fun to do once in a while, though.
Yeah, I did in college.
Yeah, I know you did. You know, it could be pretty amusing at times.
Okay, sure. You know, I don't think I would ever have done the 2 a.m. gig. You know, I don't think I would have liked that part, but hell, in my neighborhood where I was near North, you know, on a Sunday morning, I wouldn't mind driving around at 6 a.m. I'm always up early, see if somebody needs to go to the airport or something. Yeah. Make yourself $50.
What we need to do is we need to set up the Stocks and Jocks cash cab.
Oh yeah. Well now the. Those medallions got to be down to, what do you figure they're down to, Manny? They got to be back down to 2025. At some point, they got to be a buy. Because you could still, you know, wait in line at the airport and do those kinds of things. Plus, I think you can be an Uber driver if you're a cab driver, right?
Yeah.
You can do both. You don't see too many people anymore that are Lyft and Uber, do you?
No, you do.
You do?
Okay. Yeah. In fact, I would say most of them are.
Okay.
It's the same people.
Well, it's
they use whatever app is going to get the most riders.
Well, isn't the Lyft real big in the suburbs and Uber also? City's pretty much all Uber.
I don't know if that's true. It might be, but you can take either or. I know some people that are exclusive Uber and some are exclusive Lyft, and then some whatever they get the latest coupon on, that's what they use.
Well, how does the insurance work? If you pick one up, one or the other, their insurance pays in case something happens on that ride or what?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to put a machine gun in my car for those people, though. It's hard driving with those guys around.
You know, I have always thought a machine gun would be fine, but what would be really cool is if you could have a big basher arm like He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
God. We don't have in that.
That would be something to have.
Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. What do you think, Bears, Packers?
Bears should win. Packers fans are despondent about their chances, and Bears fans are freaking out. I would say the Bears really should win this game.
I think you're right. SP Futures down 22. Right back with Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Something happening here. What it is, ain't exactly clear. Is that about the very appropriate for these days, Manny?
I would say for most days, yeah.
Yes. S&P futures down 23.75. Dow futures down 2.14. NASDAQ futures down 75. We have a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Mr. Russell Rose going to straighten it all out for us. Russell, what's up, buddy?
Straighten it all out for you.
Yep.
Oh my God, that's a big. Ooh, almost slipped there. That is a big undertaking, a very large undertaking. I don't know if I can handle all of that pressure this early in the morning.
Despite,
and I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Well, despite all my vast economic stuff I throw at people, give us like five stocks that are going up and five that are going down. People would really rather appreciate that.
If I do that?
Yeah.
go. Goodness gracious. You're catching me like 3 minutes out of bed in New York, man.
Oh, man.
Five stocks going up and going down. You got to give me until next week.
All right.
How's
that? All right.
Because you know what? There's somebody that does those sorts of things, and when I was just starting at SIBO, somebody asked him for an option trade, and he threw out I think an Apple Iron Condor or something like that.
Yep.
And so I was I was just putting on small trades just to get a feel for things because I was getting back into options from futures, and I did the trade he said, and then I bumped into him about 3 days later. And I said, "Oh man, I put that Iron Condor you talked about." And he goes, "What Iron Condor?"
Yeah,
they asked you about Apple, blah blah blah. I was, he goes, "You know, I just made that up off the top of my head."
Was his first name Alex?
I don't even want to throw something out there.
I know people like might listen
because I don't want anybody to copy it without me actually doing a little decent work on it.
Was his first name Alex?
No, his first name was not Alex.
All right,
it Could have been.
Could have been, yes. By the way, for those that don't know, an iron condor is a way to be short premium without being short contracts. So if a stock's trading 200 and you think it's going to stay at 200, you may sell the 220 call and the 180 put, but you'll cover yourself by buying the 230 call and the 170 put, so you're not naked short anything. So they call that...
I think back when this was recommended, it would have been like the 80s and the 90s or something.
Yeah. But for a long period of time, that was probably the... For retail people who were trying to learn options and sell premium, that probably was the most popular trade.
Yeah.
And then it came on.
And that's the person that said it was kind of known for teaching iron condors.
Well, then we went into a trending market. A trending market, it's not a good trade because you just walk through one side or the other. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, and when I speak about options, it's because I know what I'm talking about. There are times when this strategy works spectacularly for a month, a year, 5 years, and all of a sudden it's another strategy that works for a while.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they just come and they go. I mean, I was saying right now, Russell, that if you were not a retail person, I mean, you could do it through us, okay? Because we basically watch your ass, for lack of a better term. You could go long straddles with the idea of scalping futures against them, and never being naked one way. Never being without quantifiable risk. So, and right now we're not going to get the tweets and the news from Washington on the first hand, but we can be a fader. So if you had this straddle on right now, you're a buyer right here.
Yeah.
And most of the days we open way down, we come back. We open way up, we come down.
Yeah.
Most of the days.
That wouldn't have worked very well for the last couple of years though.
No. You'd have been long premium, nothing happens, and you suck on the premium.
Yep.
So, like I said, every strategy has its day.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that is, and maybe we're going over the top technical for early in the morning, but, you know, VIX is in the 20s, and, you know, that sort of trade that's a little bit more expensive when you're buying the, options than it would have been a couple of years ago is working. When the options were super cheap, that kind of strategy wasn't going to work.
Right. Well, yeah.
You know? It shows you how well the option market adjusts to what ends up really going on.
Well, I'm going to guess, I don't have the stuff up here yet, but that the straddle tonight in the close in the spider is close to 1%.
Oh, easily.
Maybe even a hair more.
Going into next week?
No, I'm talking about the one that expires tonight.
Oh, the one that expires tonight. Oh, yeah.
And if you buy the Monday, sell today, I'll bet you have to pay a dollar for it. And there were times you could have got that for 20 cents, and every time you did, you lost money.
Yeah.
Right now, you're...
Selling options on Friday morning was a great strategy for about 3 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now, today, I think, obviously, we've already moved, you know, damn near 1%. Yeah. So it's not like they're priced wrong, but if you look at the back of your head and you go, I really want to buy something that I need a 1% move virtually in 7 hours to break even when we just went through a 2-year period where we didn't want any 1% move.
Nope. So, it's amazing how quickly the regimes change too.
Right, but I've seen them all, you know, one way or the other. Obviously, the thing that used to happen, Russell, when I say used to, you know, going back to like a Methuselah or something, once in a while, people would... The volatility would be very, very cheap, and some piece of news would come out of nowhere, and you actually could buy, you know, a 9 volatility and have the thing explode.
Yeah.
Now, for a long period of time, we only move after the volatility is up. It's almost just the opposite. When the options are cheap, you want to sell them. When they're expensive, you want to buy them.
Yeah. No, I've done real work on that. I'm doing work on that right now for the next VIX book that is coming out in February. What you're talking about is exactly what I'm working on. I'm waiting for the year to come to an end so I can use year-end data for 2018 for the book.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with only a few people in the options business that are very in tune with everything that's going on with the banks and with government. They're probably not going to get surprised by the news. So if they think,
no, they're not.
If they think
you're, I'll tell you, your former co-host, Dr. J, has always been very good at that. He always seems to know how his pulse on a lot of what's going on.
John has, and this is not talking out of school. Everybody knows this. Listen to him. John has a system where, way back in the day, way back with Track Data, which is a machine that allowed you to do a lot of, I won't even call it programming, but it had, what do you call it when there's all kinds of different things that's in there and you can just use the tools in the machine without you actually writing code. What do you call that? There's a million settings.
Oh, there'd be like a macro API thing that he has with this. Basically, people refer to it, the software having tools that you can use now.
Well, what John did was,
you don't necessarily have to program.
What John did was different than anybody else. Is way back, and there always were people who felt, pick a stock, General Motors, this is the options trade, whatever. 5,000 a day. I'll pick a number. And all of a sudden, one day, they trade 10 or 15 or something. There's increased activity. Well, so there were guys that would actually just go buy GM and say, well, something's happening here.
They would follow whatever that
was. What John did.
But the option trader knew something.
But then again, there were people, because I was doing professional trading for people. I could go in, we had a huge client here in Chicago. I could go in and buy, and sell. We did a 30,000 call settle in one place in a stock that didn't do anything. Maytag, they're gone now. But we bought it was 10,000. We bought, what did we buy, 100? Was it 100 some thousand shares of stock and sold 10,000 calls? Or was it a million shares of stock? We bought 10,000 calls. And so anybody who saw that would have said this was a very bearish trade.
Just the call part?
No, we did both.
No. Somebody who just noticed.
Yeah,
that's what you're getting.
They're going to say that somebody's very bearish. And, in fact, they weren't. They were buying stock. So what John did that upped his game was he not only noticed the difference in the buys and the sells, but whether the buys and the sells occurred on the offer or on the bid. So if you're going to be bullish and you're really pushing a GM, you're not going to, if the market's, $2 to $2.20 on a call, and you really want it, you're not going to put in a $2.10 bid, or wait for somebody to hit you with two. You're gonna pay $2.20. You're gonna pay $2.25, right? So John's mechanism allowed him to not only pick out the activity, but the activity were people looking like they were pushing, like they really wanted to sell or they really wanted to buy. But now, as time went by, of course, a million people have stuff like this. So yours has got to be real early. Because if you and I, all of a sudden, somebody lobbed us $2 million and we wanted to piss off all the Johns of the world, we could run in and buy, 2,000 contracts in Tiddlywinks Inc. that trades four options a day. This is going to light up on everybody's machine. John's is probably sophisticated enough, and John has a real lot of knowledge, because John was my first employee, so he learned from some good people. He's going to know.
He's part of your coaching tree.
Yeah, he's part of my coaching tree. He's going to sit there and go, this one looks a little weird. But I guarantee you, you and I could trick every one of the other bleeps into running and buying options in this thing, and we could sell it to them probably. Because everybody's going to say that the Chief and Russell and Matty Weber must know something. In fact, we don't know a squat. We're just trying to game the system. I'll bet we can make 20 cents on the options. Because everybody in the world now is looking for the same thing. Is that a fair explanation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in my previous job, I would write things up, write trades up, and I totally would do it the way that John was picking them out. I'm actually going to start doing that again, the job that I have, but I'm going to start doing it beyond just the equity option market.
I would love John's stuff to be spitting out here on a computer next to me, but I'll bet I do. Out of the 10 indicated ones, I bet I do one of them, and I bet he does too, because he's that smart.
There's got to be more logic to it. And when when I was saying that he's like, you know, you were saying that, that there are people that don't get totally surprised by the volatility and stuff because of, you know, because of what he's doing every day on CNBC now. You know, he's paying attention to what everybody is saying, and then he's probably having side conversations as well. And I think he's picked up on some macro stuff early in the past.
Yep.
Because, you know, he's kind of, it's like you said, people that are tuned in with the banks and everything. I think he's the first person I think of. And really, he's the first person because he pointed out, you know, the Greek debt thing that happened a few years ago. He pointed that one out to me about 6 months before it happened. We actually ended up on the same flight, and we were talking. And I said, well, you know, what are you worried about next? And he said, because I'm hearing that things are really bad in Greece, and it hadn't even hit anybody's radar yet.
Well, that's so, that. Yep. He's going to have the ability to talk to a lot of people that are into different parts of the world. I mean, you and I are probably not normally going to bump into somebody from Morgan Stanley's Mediterranean bond desk.
Yeah.
But, you know what, I'd love to. Once in a while. You know.
I'm in New York, and I should walk over to the Mediterranean bond desk at all the firms today.
But by the same token,
I got to do better about that and then share with you.
Well, right, but I mean, by the same token, you and I are capable of talking to people that are have gone all around the world to work for the Federal Reserve, and they're not governors. There's no way we're running policy, but they are seeing what's going on around the world and saying this country's putting this kind of exchange together. Once in a while, you'll hear something that says somebody's not doing so hot, or they are, or something. It's just conversation. But yeah, John, he loves being on CNBC because of that. Why wouldn't you?
Oh yeah,
you're picking up info.
Totally connected. I love being at SIBO because I get to talk to a bunch of people about options all the time.
You like being on Stacks and Jacks. You know, you get to talk to me and Lou. And
I can talk to you. And someday you'll invite me out to series. And,
yeah.
Without me bringing a pretty girl or anything, maybe you'll let me come on my own.
Oh, we were loaded with girls last night. Audrey was down. She brought a couple of her pals, and Jay-Z came by, and it was a female fest.
Did you have a Christmas party without me?
No, we would never do that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just making sure.
I'll tell you what, I've learned an awful lot from Kyle Deniger.
Yeah.
I don't know if too many people know more than that guy. What do you think, Manny?
He's pretty knowledgeable. I don't agree with all of his opinions, but, man, he knows his stuff. You can pretty much ask him about anything, except for sports, probably.
Yep.
But other than that, that guy knows his stuff, man, and he's very interesting and entertaining.
And I think Dr. How many shows have two PhDs on it? We've got Russell and we've got Professor Snar.
Goodness.
You know, Professor Snar.
We have a good cast of characters that kind of cover the spectrum. It's,
I don't even count
very enjoyable.
Now, do you count Dr. J as one of the PhDs?
He says he's a PhD in mad science.
Yeah.
By the way,
I have half a PhD. I'm not quite there yet. You're the only person that's given it to me, and I appreciate that. Yeah. Everybody else is. When are you going to get it done?
So this is an interesting question on Twitter. Bob writes in, China's return to the U.S. soybean market this week comes too little too late for many Midwestern farmers. He says, if you're a farmer, do you even plant beans next year?
The answer is probably yes.
But if you can lock it in decently,
Every time, don't ever get mature like me. Because I immediately get that question. What do you think the first thing that goes through my mind, Russell, is?
I don't know.
Am I an Illinois soybean farmer that can trade them overseas through New Orleans or sell them to people right here? Or am I a South Dakota soybean farmer that only has one way to go, and that's out west, and China is pretty much my only customer? I think that's a two-part question. Or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
What do you think, Russell, without being a transportation guru, I mean, I'm probably a little more of that than you, if we tried to plan for it next year and the crisis happened again with the northern soybean growers, do you think they could be set up to get some of that produce down here a little better than this year and not take as much of a basis risk hit if we plan it in advance? Not so sure.
I'd have to look. You'd have to look at it. Wouldn't you have to look at the pricing on it? But
well, we're talking about here in this question. Unfortunately, this question is a spectacular one, but it drives me to the detail. Whenever you're a farmer, it's not you can't point to the screen and say sold, like most people think you can. You can't. You have to sell your stuff. That means where are you? What is your grade of stuff? Has it been sitting under a tarp? I tell you what, the Chinese are not going to want the crap that's been sitting under the tarp all summer. So when the question was, should you grow for some next year, the answer is yes, because unless it's in a really good place to keep it, it's probably not going to be that much good next year, right, Russell?
Yeah.
And now the question is, with all the oil and everything else coming out of what used to be the Burlington Northern, Warren Buffett's railroad, is there room for, 100 unit trains of soybeans next year to come this way? Do you have the covered hopper cars? Do you have the containers? I don't know the answer to that, but I would love to know the answer to that, because if it turns out that guy has a basis risk, I'm going to say right now, Russell, if soybeans are $9 at the Board of Trade, they're probably $8 on the dock in Seattle, and they're probably $4 in Minnesota. Or do you think I'm way off?
I don't know that much about the spot market and getting things around. So I couldn't even venture a guess on the
because this is how this is why people who are in the grain markets love them, because they're so
nobody else knows.
It's sort of so complicated, and they are a lifetime. It's like
can I tell you what I did when I saw the news real quick, and I find it interesting. And it gels with what you're talking about right now, because I'm doing more work with the CME. I saw the news. I saw beans went down a little bit, and then I backtracked and looked at all the block trading activity and bean options going back for a week or so, and nobody traded it. It's not like somebody bought put with the idea that this announcement was coming.
Well, I say the
which I thought was interesting. I always like when something like that comes out, I want to see if somebody traded it.
But this is the message that I'm trying to clumsily bring out here, Maddie's trying to drag out of me, is the price of soybeans has come down. Mm-hmm. But the story, the individual pain of individual people, is not at all written in the Board of Trade price, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's written as where you are, who you are. I mean, the people up there, I'm going to say their price is $4 and $5 at their farm. They have somebody come get it and do something with it. They're not set up to come this way. Could they be by next year? I'm hoping maybe yes. Same way with the, we had a oil guru sitting down with us a few weeks ago, and he goes to people in the Permian. Oil was $65 at the time. It's not that now. He goes to the Permian, the price there is $45, $48 maybe. It's a $17 hit on the basis because there's no pipeline from the Permian to the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to truck it to either truck it all the way, which is really bad.
Or you truck it
to a rail line.
Well, my assumption on the rails, and you don't go west like I do when you head home, but the unused rail cars that are kind of on the on the west side of Chicago, I have a funny feeling they can ramp up capacity to ship anything very, very quickly if they need to.
What kind of cars?
I don't know. Not the ones you sleep in. They got all kinds of them. I'm going to pay more attention now.
Well, nobody uses boxcars anymore. They use containers.
I know they don't use boxcars.
I'll
pay more attention to them. I'll look very closely at them. I'm assuming. And you know more about this than I do. Can you use the same kind of containers that you use for coal for soybeans?
Coal comes in coal cars.
Yeah.
The aluminum coal cars.
They look like big buckets.
Yeah. Well, that's an open car. If you're using grain, they're called a covered hopper because there's a top on them. You don't want them raining on your grain. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, Pullman had the patent on the covered hopper for 17 years.
Okay. Well, You email me a picture of what a grain car looks like, and I'll send my 14-year-old out to the train yard over the weekend, and I'll have her count them.
I doubt very seriously if you're seeing covered hoppers sitting on the side of the road.
Okay. I don't know. I know there's a lot. I know what a boxcar looks like, and they're not all boxcars.
And the rest of them are going to be the old trailer train cars where they put the entire trailer, the truck trailer on there with the wheels and everything?
Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of those. I know what those look like.
Those were all...
No, there's not, not a lot of those sitting out there.
No, because everything's a container now. Because you can stack the containers too high. And those things you can only do one high. See, man, what happens when you ask me a train question?
Oh, I know. I'm well aware.
I know all of our listeners turned off.
Yeah, they all turned off.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean...
I learn a lot.
Well, it's like, I feel the same way if somebody... One of my clients sent me an email the other day. With the VIX here, should I buy or sell? And I go, first of all, the VIX is...
No.
The VIX is 20...
I'll give you a market opinion right now.
Okay.
I think you stay away from it until... I see a repeat of... was it 2016 where things started off terribly for the first... 6-7 weeks, and then we started to run higher once again.
Yeah, we did have a bad January, one of those years.
Yeah, that's the year I think is going to repeat itself.
Well, why do you think with the Fed not overly say the Fed's neutral?
Yeah, and they're going to if the CME futures have it right, the Fed's going to neutral. I don't know if they're going to tell us that later next week, but the CME has them going to neutral for like the next 9 months or so.
Actually, so do I. I agree with that. I think they do one more in December, take a bunch of abuse. They wait and see next year, and the economy sputters, and there's never a next one.
No, everything has completely shifted as far as the anticipation. A month ago, the anticipation was a couple more hikes next year, kind of spread out. Now it's 50-50 for one, maybe in September, but it's been pushed way out. And in fact, the one next week is only like 80% priced in. And I just think I would go against that. I think it's 100%.
Russell, we're also all in this. We're 10 years into the situation where only the Fed moves interest rates. Yet I know from the 10 years before that, interest rates move on their own, and the Fed sometimes just follows. If the Fed says, well, I'm not raising any more rates next year, but they continue to drain the balance sheet, and they have the 3.5% raise where they're dragging some money out of the system, just in general, the interest rates might sneak up sort of on their own. And if we have this inflation that I believe is here, you're going to see your long-term rates go up that the Fed has nothing to do with. I had a mortgage back in the day. Robin and I had a mortgage, contributed to the show. 8%, I believe, in September. The next June, it was 14. Fed didn't do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you feel
that, I don't think we're going to see anything like that.
We better hope not.
For the rest of our lifetime.
We better hope not, because to let that happen again would be really, really stupid. Because it was so bad one time. Russell, enjoy yourself in New York. Get back safe. S&P futures down 21.
We'll see you next Wednesday.
Yep, NASDAQ futures down 69. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks, Mr. John Neal.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Alley's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have global news today as China's growth is faltering. As the headline says, China just reported ugly economic data because of the trade war and its roiling financial markets, which they've had over there. And they also, as we reported a couple weeks ago, their dollar and other currency denominated debt is starting to, some of that's starting to default a little bit, and probably going to get worse if their currency keeps going down. But that hasn't happened yet. It's just something to keep your eye on. There's not much we can do about that, can we, Matty? Chinese currency. S&P futures down 22. Dow futures not only down 194, they were up down over 200. NASDAQ down 70. Oil down only 6 cents now. It was down more earlier. 10-year yield 2.89. Asia, we got some whack over here. Nikkei down 441. It's 2%. Shanghai down 40, 1.5%. Hang Seng down 429. It's 1.6. So they're down, you know, pretty heavy. Like I said, oil is down 6 cents. Brent down 11. So not much going on there. Natural gas, however, is under $4, $3.93. Whether that shows up on your bill or not, God only knows. RBOB, $146, Manny. Home heating oil, $187. Gold, whack, down $5.60. Silver down 20 cents, not good there. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. More accidents are accumulating this morning. It's been a rough start to a Friday morning, which is usually relatively quiet, but now
it's
we have
wet. Go faster, faster.
Exactly. Now we have a crash on the Stevenson outbound just before Ashland. That's causing delays on I-55. Lakeshore Drive out to the Tri-State's up to 29 minutes. To I-355 is 39 minutes, and those travel times are growing on the Stevenson. On the outbound side, it's always slow on the inbound side, but now the outbound side's slow due to this crash, so keep that in mind. Earlier crash on the Skyway at the Dan Ryan is all clear, so that's good news. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Normal traffic volumes on the Eisenhower. That earlier crash on the Kennedy at Kemble is clear, but the Kennedy's a mess with long travel times due to some earlier accidents. Everything else is looking okay, but it is foggy out there and rainy in certain areas, so give yourself plenty of time as you head out this morning. Weather today, the fog will clear and we'll actually have a pleasant day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 43. Right now it's overcast and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 70. Right now it's cool and clear and 40 in Phoenix. Same as Chicago. In sports, Bulls were in Mexico City last night taking on the Magic, and they lost to Orlando 97-91. Suns beat the Mavericks 99-89. In hockey, Coyotes topped the Sabres 3-1. Blackhawks were off. And in Thursday Night Football, it was a classic last night between the Chargers and the Chiefs, and the LA Chargers rallied back from two touchdowns down to beat the mighty Chiefs 29-28. Both teams are tied now at 11-3. Chief.
I have a question. John, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm all right. This Charger feel is intriguing me. Are they televising the games from there? Well, they must have. Are the Chargers on local LA TV?
I would assume so.
Are they still on in San Diego?
I would assume so, but I don't know.
Right. So they've televised like night games in this place and stuff.
I don't know if they've hosted a night game there this year, but I don't see why they wouldn't.
I will bet you $1, Mortimer, that somehow or another, if they get in the playoffs, if there's going to be a night game there, somebody's going to say the lights aren't good enough or something's not good enough, they'll have to go somewhere else.
That wouldn't surprise me. And, I mean, why wouldn't you just go to the Coliseum? I mean, there's no way that little stadium feels like a home field for them anyway. Like Kevin said, it's all visiting fans. Like when the Kansas Cities and the Pittsburghs and places like that that have big fan bases come to town, it's like 2% Charger fans.
Yeah.
The Chargers are like a redheaded stepchild. Everyone in San Diego is pissed at them because they left, and no one in L.A. cares about them.
And there's no place really else to go.
Right. And
I guess they go to Oakland.
Yeah, they could go to Oakland next year.
They're building the new place. How far along is it? And they're both going to play there, right? But they can't sell their seats, right? It's like the Jets had trouble selling theirs, even though the Giants sold out.
Yeah, and I assume something like that's going to happen. Although both teams are really good, Rams and Chargers are really good, and so that could help, bring fans back. But
how did the Chargers get so good? They always had a good quarterback.
Yeah, it's weird. They've just really improved their defense, and they're winning games. They've always been good, like you said, because of Rivers. But they were always kind of a team that kind of choked. They would start off like 6-2, and then finish like 8-8.
And they were always kind of on the bubble, right?
Exactly, and they'd lose a lot of close games, and then they'd have some head scratcher loss where they'd lose to like the Raiders or something when they were heavily favored. So I don't know, but this year they're putting it together, and they look really good on both sides of the ball.
I'm not Mr. Quarterback Judge, but I'm going to say that this guy from Minnesota is he sold too many goods.
Cousins,
he's not taking him anywhere.
I would agree.
And I don't think the guy in the Rams is that good either.
I think he's better than Cousins, and he's still a young player. Whereas Cousins, what he is. He's been in the league for 8-9 years. But Goff is his third year, and he's had a really good season, although he didn't look very good against the Bears, obviously. But Trubisky didn't look very good either, but he's only in his second season.
Yeah.
The young quarterbacks, you got to give them a couple years. Are those guys going to be great? Probably not. But Philip Rivers is a Hall of Famer, and I think he's the only player in the NFL that hasn't missed a single start in his career. Never been hurt, just goes out there and makes plays, and they're finally putting it together.
I bet he's been hurt. He's never been injured.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, everyone's hurt.
Yep. I think football's pretty decent this year. Right?
I tell you what, I'm a little nervous to see what the Bears look like now that Callahan's out for the year. I think he was a pretty important player for them, the kid that broke his foot.
My feel is, and again, this is just as long as he's the only one, that kid stepped in pretty good. Somebody else goes down, then you get a problem.
That's the thing. I mean, McManus filled in for him, and who's a very capable guy. But, like, yeah, exactly. McManus was their depth, where they would plug him in dime situations, and they'd plug him in to give guys a rest here and there. And if someone else goes down and you lose that, you're in big trouble.
Where do they get these two safeties that are pretty good? They
drafted them.
Like, in the last
all these guys
years?
They drafted, except for Callahan was a free agent. But they drafted Fuller. They drafted Amos. They drafted Jackson. All their secondary. I think Amukamara, they might have been a free agent. I'll have to check on him.
Well, Fuller, they were ready to dump for 2 years.
Yeah, he had one bad year, and everyone kind of gave up on him. But he's been really good every other year.
Yeah, but they were.
No, the Bears drafted Amukamara too, the other cornerback. So their whole secondary, as far as their four main guys, Jackson, Amos, Amukamara, and Fuller, all draft picks. I mean, that's the NFL. Like 99% of your players are draft picks.
Well, it seems like the this doesn't change no matter what the story is. They used to say your offensive line get a lot better when Gale Sayers is in the backfield. And I think when you get pressure on a quarterback, your secondary looks a lot better too.
That's true. I mean, last year, Amos and Jackson were rated as a top three safety duo. And some stats, rankings, websites, whatever, had them as the best. And then this year, they've been just as good, if not better. And last year, the Bears had a top five defense, and this year they have the number one defense. And so, I mean,
I think those guys, defense
has been great. The difference this year is their offense is better. That's the only difference.
But no matter what you do in any sport, I think most people have played stuff, but I'll go back to softball. If you have Jeremy in left field, Matt Weber in center field looks better because you got a little less that you got to cover. You can cheat in a right fielder a little bit. We could have the bag of bones out in right field, and they're not so bad because you're covering for them. The same thing with they got this Roquan Smith now. These guys will go back a couple of steps. All of a sudden, they're picking balls up all over the place because now this guy covers more than I've seen anybody cover middle linebacker in really a long time. He's like Urlacher-like.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. And it makes the other linebackers better, too.
Yeah, I mean, that guy can get there. All I got to do is take care of my spot. I don't have to worry about that guy's spot.
I think, when you have Mac gets a lot of credit, and deservedly so. He's really good. But I think Hicks is the most important player. And when he gets pressure up the middle, it really opens things up. Now you got linebackers that are just kind of dropping back. They don't have to blitz. You have safeties that are jumping routes because they can. They know the quarterback has to make a quick decision, and it just makes everyone better.
Well, it depends on your matchups. If you're playing against, now he's doing commercials. If you're playing against Peyton Manning, who's 6'5", not near as concerned. Not that he wants a guy jumping on him. Is Hicks as Drew Brees is, because last thing you want if you're 5'11", is some guy coming at you up the middle.
Right, yeah.
So it depends on who you are and where you are. I mean, because all you got to do is start missing high, and everything's picked off.
And Brees has pretty much had like one bad game this whole season, and that was against the Cowboys when they just got tons of pressure on him.
Up the middle.
Yep.
And it's, that's just the way. Because other quarterbacks, if you're slow, you can't handle a guy coming around the end. But if you're fast, Aaron Rodgers don't even worry about that. You can almost not block them.
Yeah, it's true. They just step right up in the pocket and move around. Yeah,
it's gone in 2 seconds. So it's.
And if you have that middle linebacker that can go out in coverage, which is kind of a hybrid position these days, but so much in demand, that can also go out well in coverage. That's going to thwart that.
That's the key. I agree. And Roquan, the rookie, is one of the best I've seen in the league right now. He looks like a top five, top ten linebacker right now because he's so fast, sideline to sideline, and he can cover tight ends. He can cover running backs out of the backfield. He can stop the run. He looks like Briggs to me. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a 10 or 12 year player.
Right, because they're going to, quarterbacks going to check off plays, and all of a sudden you've got, five receivers, going out. That's a necessity these days.
And then there's the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, what about them?
So, times like this, you're happy you're still a Steelers fan?
You got it. And, we had, one of the best till last year in that position. I'm talking about Shazier, so.
Yep.
Steelers are struggling this year, though. What happened to them lately?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what. It's either been hot or cold, and I will give them credit in one thing, though. The games we have lost have been, you know, not that it makes it any easier, but been, you know, just by a few points, you know, could have gone one game or the other. But, yeah, in the clinch, they're just choking. So it's kind of a shame.
It's strange because they're 7-5-1, so they're still in first place in the AFC North just by half a game on Baltimore. But they've lost three in a row, and yet they've outscored their opponents by 61 points over the course of the season. So when they're winning, they're winning big, and when they're losing close. But they've their lost three in a row.
Their offensive line is not giving the big guy much help. They can't run at all.
Well, yeah, Le'Veon Bell holding out, and then their backup being hurt has definitely hurt them.
They can't run at all, and once in a while they can't pass block either. So,
well, and truthfully, I don't know. I think the line's been pretty good. I think the problem has been is Roethlisberger has been hot and cold. He's thrown a ton of interceptions this year, you know, a ton of bad balls. You can't blame his receivers too much and things like that.
Okay, Jan, we got to talk about 20.
You want to talk about business now?
Yeah. Well, how come every time we get our gold up to a spot where it's going to break out, I refuse to sell calls there like an idiot? Because I could have sold them for 20 cents 15 times this year, and it's like 4% or 5%, for God's sake. And and yet, again, I'm sitting there. This might be the time it breaks through. I was looking to do a repair. I didn't get the repair on. And all of a sudden, we're back down again today. You know, next week we'll creep up a few days, and then we get to the same level and come back down. I mean, it's really weird.
Right. Well, yeah, in my case, you know, I'm pretty close on my calls. So, you know, I'll be rolling them today. You know, I did, you know, some yesterday. You know, I got a couple different strikes in there, you know, the multiples on this thing. And so this, you know, little move down is going to be, you know, somewhat beneficial to me today. And then, I was able to also, you know, sell some calls. So looking pretty good at overall in the program.
Well, Dan did a big fat repair. He did like the 19-20 and a half, like a dollar and a half repair in there, and He's kicking butt on it. I didn't do that. I tried to do a smaller one, and I mean, he caught it like right on the low. So, you know, that was nice.
Right, and you know, and that's going to happen here and there, and pretty you know, forgiving when you're doing this, and that's, you know, one of the reasons that you know, we help people with this.
Well, and then for those of the listeners that we're talking about, is this is another one of those things where you say, if you live in the Midwest or in Phoenix, you live in the Midwest, you don't normally take dollar considerations into your daily life. So when we say today gold is down, it's down in relation to the dollar, but the dollar's up. Okay? So gold is probably either unchanged or up in relation to the yen. Or certainly the British pound, because the British pound has been wilting because of the Brexit deal. So if you're long gold versus British pound, you think you're having an up day, but in fact you're having a down day in your pound. We're trying. Right. We might be a little too technical this morning, but Maddie had some questions from the listeners, so they sent us there. Maddie, what can I say?
That's all right.
And so once in a while we got to do that because, by the way, nobody else can. I don't think, at least correctly. Yeah. So
no, I think you're absolutely right about that.
So I'm hanging in there with it, Jan, and I'm hoping, you know, we're certainly a lot better than we were when we're 1180 on the gold. So I don't know.
Oh, No. I've had a nice lift, you know, overall, you know, in this whole thing, Tom. So I'm you know, pleasant. I don't want to say surprised, but I'm pleased.
So what we've been fighting, some big companies, I've been fighting this continually rising dollar for a while. When does this, I mean, right now the economic slowdown appears to be happening in other places faster than it is here. So the people are buying dollars as a haven. When does, and the British thing has caused some, obviously, people would rather have dollars than the pound right now. What causes that to change? Or over the course of a month we see the dollar getting spanked, or do we not see that ever? I mean, it's obviously it's tough for people overseas. It's surely tough if you've got a dollar denominated debt and you're trading in China and you got yuans. Same thing in London. If you've got dollar denominated debt and you've got issues now with the pound, you know, currency movements can really hurt people.
Right.
Not necessarily us, because, you know, we don't know any better, basically. Or we're not that influenced by it, is probably a better term. I mean, Manny, when you come out after basketball and you guys are having a couple of cocktails, the Tripoli, does anybody bring up where the dollar's trading?
No.
I mean, all you care about is its relation to the price of beer.
And it, on that specific night, correct.
Yes. And, in fact, even, you know, if the dollar got clobbered that day, it doesn't really matter in your pocket or the Tripoli tap or virtually everything else we do all day long.
Not that day.
Unless we decide to book a hotel in London that's going to be $500 when the day before it might have been $480. Right? That's probably the only difference we'll see.
Sure.
If you happen to be going there. But now, if you're in London, it's more of a difference. If you're in some, if you're in China and you owe money in dollars, it's a huge difference. So it all becomes, you know, pretty much very relative. So, who are you guys going to draft with the number one pick, the Arizona Cardinals?
Oh, heck, I haven't even begun to look at that yet, but I'm not sure.
Well, Heisman Trophy winner is going to play baseball, right, Manny?
That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, Kyler Murray out of Oklahoma is a spectacular quarterback and just won the Heisman, but apparently he's such a good baseball player, he has no interest in the NFL draft, and he's going to go play baseball.
Is he a pitcher or shortstop, or what is he?
I don't know. I'll have to look.
He's outfield. I think he's outfield.
I was going to say, I think he's an everyday player, but I didn't know
really?
What position.
Well, I'd rather play baseball.
Well, yeah, the contracts are guaranteed. The head injuries are few and far between. I think it's a much better option if you're a can't miss guy.
Yeah, I mean,
I read an article on it. He's a real together kid too.
Good for him.
Real nice together kid. So.
Were you agreeable with that selection? I kind of thought the kid at Ohio State might win, but
I was fine with it. Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about who wins the Heisman. Usually, that guy's not a good NFL player anyway. Whoever wins the Heisman,
exactly. That's what I was going to say. How many Heisman quarterbacks were bust?
Right. College football is just like, it's just like an appetizer.
What if you,
for the real thing?
When a position player wins the Heisman, they're almost always good.
Oh yeah, you got to be like spectacular.
I mean,
you mean in the pros?
No, and I'm saying if you're Herschel Walker or somebody, I mean, you don't see those guys flunk out in the pros too often.
No, definitely not.
Tim Brown was fine. I mean, every back is
good.
But
I'm saying I think it's like 1 in 10 are actually good, which you would think all of them would be good.
I mean, as quarterbacks.
No, I think as anything. I mean, as even as pros.
Boy, I don't know if too many.
I mean, Herschel Walker is not in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Well, because he got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, now for him, it was more bad luck, I guess, but it's not like he was like some world beater in the pros.
I'm going to say his first 3 years, I don't know if anybody had too many first 3 years much better.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I obviously he played, I'm trying to think what year he, 85. So I saw him like the very end of his career. And I saw him all through the 90s. He played until like 97. He played a long time. He played like 12 or 13 years in the NFL, which is really good. But I never remember him being that great.
Well, I mean,
he was a great college player.
I mean, sometimes
he's in the College Football Hall of Fame, and deservedly so. But it's not like he was a big time pro.
Well, I mean, if you look at the list of running backs, I think you're going to find well, in my day, Southern Cal had a bunch. I mean, they had OJ. They had who was the guy that came after him? They had a string of how many in a row? Running backs from Southern Cal, it was Mike Garrett, OJ. It was, John McKay. Every 3 years he came up with a world beater running back. Imagine that. But I mean,
it hasn't really changed. They still produce big time running backs every couple years.
Well, the kid from Notre Dame, the guys that have won at Notre Dame have all been. Terry Henry didn't do any good, but Leon Hart was a star, and Paul Hornung obviously was a star. Tim Brown had a great career. I mean,
let me pull up the list.
You see Terry Hanratty?
No, who was the guy that won the John Hewitt. I'm sorry, John Hewitt.
Oh.
It was just okay. But when they were you're right, the quarterbacks.
So, for example, Baker Mayfield won it in 17. I'll tell you right now, he's not going to be a Hall of Fame player in the NFL. Lamar Jackson won it in 16. He's terrible. Derrick Henry won it in 15. He did have a really good game last week, but he has not had a good career. Marcus Mariota won it in 14. He's terrible. Jameis Winston won it in 13. He's even worse. Yep. Johnny Manziel won it in 12. He's not even in the league.
There's the ultimate one.
Yeah.
Robert Griffin III won it in 2011. He's terrible and barely in the league. Cam Newton, you have to go back to 2010 to find the last good player.
What, how far back do you got to go to find somebody who's not a quarterback?
Let's see. Did I name Derrick Henry is not a quarterback. So there's only been one non-quarterback in the last 9 years that I read. 2009, Mark Ingram won it. He's still in the league, but he's not very good. 2008, Sam Bradford won it. He's out of the league and terrible. 2007, Tim Tebow won it. He's out of the league and terrible. 2006, Troy Smith won it. He's terrible. Reggie Bush won it in 05. He was solid, but he wasn't great.
Right.
Matt Leinart won it in 04. Terrible. Jason White won it in 2003. I don't even think he played in the NFL. Carson Palmer won it in 2002. He had a good career. Not a Hall of Famer, but a good career. 2001, Eric Crouch won it. Terrible. 2000, yep. Chris Wankie won it. Terrible. 99, Ron Dayne won it. Terrible. 98, Ricky Williams. Solid player, but not good. 97, Charles Woodson. So you have to go back to 1997 to find a Hall of Fame like NFL player. And Charles Woodson's borderline. Before that,
one of the only ones you mentioned was, you know, Cam Newton. That's had a very good long career.
Yeah, I mean, before that, Danny Werfel, terrible. Eddie George, very solid.
Did I read that Tim Tebow is going to be on somebody's major league roster this year?
Yeah, the Mets.
Really?
Well, he's on their active like 40 man. I don't know if he's.
Is he that good?
He's been solid in the minor leagues. Like, he's working his way up.
What does he play?
I think he's an outfielder.
Yeah, he's outfielder.
I mean, this list of Heisman Trophy winners is atrocious.
Yeah, but as soon as they started picking all quarterbacks.
Well, I read there's running backs in there, and cornerbacks. 94, Rashawn Salaam. Obviously, RIP, he's dead. Bears drafted him. Horrible NFL player. Charlie Ward in 93 played basketball. 92, Gino Toretto, terrible. 91, Desmond Howard, he was a kick returner in the NFL. He was okay. Ty Detmer, terrible. Andre Ware, I mean... Barry Sanders, 1988.
See? There you go.
So
the rest of my case.
You have to work 30 years to find a real player. And then 87, Tim Brown, another great player.
Tim Brown and Sanders were two of the best of that whole thing. Where does that go back? Do you say 87, 88? Yeah.
Literally 30 years back. So Barry Sanders, Tim Brown, and then 86, Vinny Testaverde. He played a long time, but he wasn't very good. 85, Bo Jackson, obviously was great.
Yep.
And then Flutie, Mike Rozier, Herschel Walker, and then Marcus Allen, 81. That would be another Hall of Famer.
Yep.
I mean, the list is not.
Yeah, but how come when you go back from 88, everybody was good, seemingly.
Well,
it became a curse. It's the death knell to win the Heisman.
Yeah, in the 80s, I would agree. George Rogers in 1980, he wasn't any good. Marcus Allen, great. Herschel Walker, very good. Mike Rozier. I don't think he was much in the pros.
Well, he ended up getting these college-style quarterbacks that were younger, and they all had feet, and they got in the pros, and they didn't do crap.
That's the thing. Yeah. You're exactly right. The college game is a different game. And so the best player in college doesn't usually translate to the best player in the
pros. Well, if you didn't, I'll take a shot at Alabama. And everybody. In college, if you played a serious opponent every week, you wouldn't run your quarterback 20 times a game like in the pros. But you can get away with it.
Right. Yep.
But if Alabama plays two real games a year, they can get away with it.
And the Heisman Trophy winner that won it 2 years ago, Lamar Jackson, out of Louisville, 2016, the Ravens are trying to do that with him right now, where he's running like 15, 20 times a game. He's going to get killed.
Yeah.
I think they've done it 2 or 3 weeks now, and I'm watching this guy, and he's really electric. I mean, he's a really talented runner, but he can't throw. And so they're running with him, and he's taking these huge hits. I'm like, you're going to kill this kid. Like, this is not going to last.
The way to do it,
a 2 year career. That's the problem.
Well, the way you do it, if you can do it, is like Seattle does.
Yes, or like Mitch does with the Bears.
Yeah. Well, you wait until the fourth quarter, to when your defense is kind of sucking air anyway. The last thing you need is a couple of 20-yard quarterback runs
when everyone's dropped back in coverage.
When everybody's dropped back in coverage, and these linemen are chasing you. All of a sudden, you can totally demoralize the defense if you do it 4 times a game.
Exactly right. Yeah, and you're still pass first in that situation.
And probably 3 of the 4 times, you can run out of bounds and slide, you don't even get hit.
And don't even take a hit.
Yeah.
Mitch barely takes hits, and Russell Wilson barely takes hits. Aaron Rodgers, when he's healthy, he's good at that, too. There's a handful of guys. Cam is good at that, too. And they rarely take big hits, but I'm watching this Lamar Jackson. I'm like, man, they're running like option with him and like all these zone replays.
Crazy.
I'm like, this is not going to last.
No, that's not going to work out. So, John, we've got holiday markets. We've got tariff stuff, I don't think we slow down between now and the end of the year. I think we have a couple of, we have 3 weeks left and we're pretty busy.
Yeah, no, I think so. I got a little blip of a down day today. Wouldn't be surprised if that totally turns around, to be honest with you, Tom.
Yeah, I'd like to see our gold turn around too and sell something. And like I say, it's been a good month for us. We've come back quite a bit in there.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't see us as with this big year-end rally unless all of a sudden this China thing is just done. But I don't see how it can be that quick. Do you?
Well, you know, I mean, I think they're going to be little, once again, it's kind of a political thing. There are going to be little bits and pieces of news story, you know, that are going to, you know, prop this thing up unjustly.
Yep. All right, Jan, we got a dash, bud.
Because there's anything real.
Keep that thought for next week. We'll talk about it on Tuesday. SP Futures up, I'm sorry, down 22. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.